Well, thank you, Phil. Friends, may I add my welcome to Tim's. We are spending most of our morning services this term mining for treasure in the book of Proverbs, finding God's wisdom for living in God's world. And jumping straight in, we've spent the last 2 weeks building some foundations. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It is out of our allegiance to Him that we gain understanding. We said previously that Proverbs, I don't know what you thought of when Phil was reading those various Proverbs, we've said that Proverbs are pithy, practical sayings that, when applied to the correct situation, lead to God's blessing. That's what we're about this morning. Proverbs were collected over a long period of time, and hence the jumbled form we have them in, echoing the fact that life, too, is jumbled. But to draw some sort of order over these few weeks, we're looking at the book thematically. This week, taking one subject, the subject of work colleagues, and picking out different proverbs to help us. Now, it's worth saying at the start that the book of Proverbs was not written in the first instance to the newly qualified secondary school teacher, or the junior manager travelling to meet clients, or the self-employed consultant trying to grow her client base. But it was written from the perspective of a father to a son, advising him to take God's path, the way of woman wisdom, and not the dark path of foolish choices that leads to death. But insofar as it teaches us how to treat our neighbours, that is simply those around us, including in 1st century Israel, in 9th century Israel BC, those we'd go to the temple with to worship, we're able to apply its wisdom today to how we treat those on our street, how we treat others in this church, how we treat those on our university course or our school course, and yes, how we treat those in our offices and staff rooms. So, want to be wise in dealing with those around you? If so, here's four practical action points. Short and sweet, a challenge to me, and I hope a challenge to you too. Four action points of what the wise man or woman does, how they act in treating neighbours, brothers and sisters in church, work colleagues. This is not a morality teaching. This is not life coaching, but it is what it means practically to live in the fear of the Lord, the God of Israel. So, number one, if you are a wise man or woman, first of all, you do your duty. You do your duty. That is, you fulfill your obligations. Let's read again verse 27 and 28. I hope you do have a sheet in front of you. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is in your power to act. Do not say to your neighbor, come back tomorrow and I'll give it to you, when you already have it with you. Well, easy to understand, not so easy to do. There's first the issue of justice here. Justice, verse 27. When you do have the power to act, especially that is towards the poor, do not withhold good. And likewise, verse 28, when you should do your duty now, don't put it off until tomorrow. Justice shouldn't be procrastinated. You may think, well, that's all fine and good, but surely it's my right to give my money or my tool or my expertise or my aid when I want. But the sense of verse 27 is perhaps even stronger than do not withhold good from those who deserve it. It's more like do not withhold good, whatever good that is, that belongs to him. That is, the good belongs to the requester. So actually giving your time or your gifts or your expertise is not so much an option. It's here presented as a duty. Do your duty. This is really practical stuff. It means the wise are those who are attentive to the needs of their community, or their church, or their course, or their office. The foolish are attentive only to their own needs. This means it's your duty to lend your neighbour some garden tools if they need it. This means within all good sense and consideration, it's your duty to send someone here that email they've asked for, preferably before tomorrow. This means for the good of your office or its environment, it's your duty to share your expertise in spreadsheet formulae or coding or document design or whatever it is. So being a wise person here is about having a sense of priority, a sense of organisation, a sense of timeliness, but above all, integrity towards your community. Being a person of your word. One thing you can give and still keep is your word. Those we work with may have great intentions in making promises, but it's the wise, godly person, Proverbs says, who keeps their promises, building trust with work colleagues, the glue of good relationships. Do your duty by being sensitive to your community's needs. That's both an action point and an attitude we are to cultivate. So number one, do your duty. Short and sweet, just like Proverbs. Number two, strive for peace. Strive for peace. Let's read again verse 29 and 30. Do not plot harm against your neighbour who lives trustfully near you. Do not accuse anyone for no reason when they have done you no harm. For the Christian in the world, God's world, living in the fear of the Lord, there are to be no false accusations, no plotting, no backstabbing. Certainly someone living in the fear of the Lord should never be part of an office coup or a plot to evict someone from a house, from a church, from a business. Specifically, verse 29, it talks of not plotting harm against someone who lives trustfully, someone who lives confidently in your community. Because we're being told here that to plot and to falsely accuse breeds suspicion and fear, and it does not build harmony. It does not strive for peace. And friends, let's be honest here, how much we need harmonious community in the church, in this church, but indeed in every church. Being part of a church together is inherently a trustful community, a community of confidence together. So what incredible harm it does to the accuser, to the falsely accused, and to the whole community when churches, sometimes, sadly, can be the place of mud flinging behind people's backs as soon as one gets in the car to go home. Churches can sometimes be the places of inventing things someone has done wrong to justify accusations against them. But Proverbs says that they are still false accusations. Let me lighten the mood with a story. John was driving home late one night down the A40 when he stopped to pick up a hitchhiker. But as he rode along, he began to become suspicious of his passenger. And John checked to see whether his wallet was safe in the pocket of his coat that sat between them. But it wasn't there. So he slammed on the brakes and he ordered the hitchhiker out and he shouted, "Hand over the wallet immediately." And so the frightened and startled hitchhiker he threw over a wad of notes and John drove off. But when he arrived home, he started to tell his wife about his experience, but she interrupted him saying, "Oh, before I forget, John, do you know that you left your wallet on the table this morning?" False accusations start with a default mood of suspicion, actually wanting someone to be evil to justify our evil. But the wise person instead strives for peace. The wise person strives for peace. One way of dealing with difficulties in church life, school life, office life is to try and escape it, what we call peace faking. Another way is to go into attack mode, peace breaking. But for those who fear the Lord, strive for trust and reconciliation, peace making. Peace making. Those whom Jesus, if you remember, called blessed. But if we don't strive for peace, a bitter plant will put its ugly roots down into our lives, and there it will fester for years, for decades even. As the military general Douglas MacArthur once said, a truce is just says you don't shoot for a while. But peace comes when the truth is known, the issue is settled, and the parties embrace each other. Don't falsely accuse. Don't plot harm, but instead strive for peace. So action points for wisdom and work colleagues. Number one, do your duty. Number two, in your work, in your communicating, in your attitude, strive for peace. Strive always for peace. Number three, know when to go. Know when to go. Proverbs 25:16-17. I've never, ever heard a sermon on these verses before. If you find honey, eat just enough. Too much of it and you'll vomit. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house. Too much of you and they will hate you. I've never seen that as a verse of the year either in a church. But friends, there is some real wisdom here. Wise living means having the empathy, the ability to understand feelings of others, to know when enough is enough. But this is about more than overeating or overstaying your welcome. It's about learning that too much of virtually any good thing can have negative consequences. There is, of course, a direct application here to some of us not visiting our neighbours too often. We might wear out are welcome. But we see here too the flip side of action point one, do your duty. Because at work, there is wisdom, isn't there, in not making ourselves a nuisance to that colleague who we always ask for a particular favour, to the extent that we become annoying. They may be okay with it initially, whatever the favour is, but after the 15th time, when we approach their desk, maybe a sudden feeling of panic may grip them. Oh no, not again. Can't she do it herself? And they may be secretly hashing plans to hide under the desk or behind an office pot plant. Tell her I'm not here. Or maybe you're the one who's been on the receiving end. Maybe you've been the one plotting to hide under your desk. The bottom line is, to build good relationships with people at work, people at school, people in our university, know when to ask, know when not to. There must be give and take. To build good relationships with neighbours, know when to go. To build good relationships with people in this church, know when and how to end a conversation. Funnily enough, they never teach you that in our Bible college. The God-given discipline of, on one hand, being warm and being welcoming and being open, especially to those that we don't yet know. But on the other hand, not talking at people for prolonged periods of time over coffee when they're clearly trying to get away, ticket running out. These are the situations that Proverbs addresses. The discipline to say, great to chat with you, but I won't take up all your time. At a party, at a church, in the office. Know when to go. Know how to respect privacy. So how to be wise with work colleagues. Number one, do your duty. Number two, strive for peace. Number three, know when to go. Number four, never mislead. Never mislead. Let's read 26:18-19. Like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is one who deceives their neighbor and says, I was only joking. This proverb is not saying, don't joke. Don't be creative, don't be imaginative. It's not saying that. But rather, it's saying, don't willfully fabricate, deceive or misrepresent and then cover it up by making light of it. To do so will not get you ahead in the office, nor will it be part of career progression. But rather, it is like a maniac with a flamethrower. That's a modern paraphrase. The consequences are out of control. It starts a war, and it will certainly result in the death of any kind of good relationship you have with your work colleague. You know, sometimes in a work environment, and I remember this well from working in investment banking, perhaps less so in management consultancy, there can be a strong temptation to mislead bosses or colleagues, to put yourself in a better light. In Oliver James's quite appalling book, Office Politics, How to Thrive in a World of Lying, Backstabbing and Dirty Tricks, he argues that for success in ever more complex white-collar environments, where the bonus pool depends on staying in the boss's good graces, you have to use your ability to hustle. That is, subtly spreading blame and delicately stealing credit. And he says the traits that make for a successful hustler are disproportionately represented in offices. And so you have, in his words, psychopaths who have no conscience, Machiavels to whom others are but pieces on a chessboard, and narcissists bursting with malignant self-love. But far from critiquing these traits, he says, by combining elements of all three, you can suck up without looking sucky and boast without looking boastful. Well, friends, I want to say from the book of Proverbs, there is another way. God's way. God's way. Don't play office politics. Never mislead. Say what you mean and mean what you say. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. Don't plan and plot how you can be seen in the best light. Take blame without spreading it when something goes wrong. This is what it means to fear the Lord on your front line. This is what it means to be salt and light where God has placed you. If you want good, wholesome, healthy colleague relationships that are blessed by God, never mislead, never play office politics. Instead, a Christian senior executive I knew once said to me, "Tim, you will be amazed at how powerful a witness it is for God and how effective as a manager it can be to say, 'I'm sorry,' or 'I was wrong,' especially if we've hurt or offended someone. We manage in being reconciled, in restoring good relationship." Well, friends, that's the gospel, isn't it? That's the gospel at work. Forgiven by God's grace to us, we're called to be workers marked by that very same grace. In dealing with problems, indeed in dealing with problem people below us, problem people above us, problem people on the same level, wisdom means having the skill to rectify it and the grace to not hold an incident over a colleague as punishment for the future. If you're a manager, it's sometimes unavoidable that on occasion you'll have to discipline staff. But wisdom is how you discipline without misleading, with honesty, speaking the truth in love, so colleagues have an opportunity to take the issue to heart and to change. Because after all, where God has placed us, we are called, aren't we, to distinctiveness, to be those that demonstrate the grace of God. We're put there ultimately to thrive in our relationships, to be a blessing to others, a blessing and a witness, ultimately pointing towards the person of Jesus Christ, who, as Phil read for us earlier, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. So friends, it is the person and the example of Jesus Christ who is our ultimate motivation here, that each should look not to our own interests, but also to the interests of others, doing nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, considering others better than ourselves. That is the key to dealing with neighbours, with brothers and sisters in church, with course mates, with work colleagues. Look to Jesus, and in doing so, we do our duty. We strive for peace. We know when to go, and we never mislead. In all these things, pointing those around us to the life and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, so that they can follow him and do the same. And it's that ongoing life, death, and resurrection that we think about now in communion as we ask the Holy Spirit to help us with these things. Just a moment of quiet. Gracious God, we long to honour you in our relationships at home, in our neighbourhood, in our schools, in our offices, in our places of work. We long that your name may be glorified. And we long that we may follow your example of humility, of treating others greater than oneself. But in these specific areas and the things that you've pressed onto our hearts this morning, the particular areas in which you're speaking to us, Lord, please allow us to be effective witnesses, to be distinctive, to be graceful in how we deal with others. Please give us empathy where we need that. Please give us tact. Please help us to be peacemakers, that your kingdom may come on this earth, that you may be glorified, and that we may receive in turn the blessing that comes from following your wisdom for life. In your name we pray these things. Amen.